When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is a View from the Bullens podcast. Listen to all the news, views and inside track from Goodison Park. This is a View from the Bullens podcast, sponsored by The Beer Killer, Liverpool One.
And welcome back to another very special episode here at the View from the Bullens. It's myself, Ben Winstallion, joined by ex-Everton player Craig Shaw. Craig, thanks for joining me for this one.
Thanks for having me. Sorry, it's been a bit delayed. I had to put you off a couple of times, but thank you very much for having me.
No, don't worry, mate. It's our pleasure to have, obviously, an ex-Everton legend on the channel. Just to start off then, Craig, I'm going to take you back to the very beginning. We're going to start off when you first started playing football. Can you just tell me a bit about growing up, when you finally realised, you know, there's a chance I could make it professionally?
Probably didn't think I realised I'd make it professionally until I was about 25. I grew up in Germany. My parents were in the forces out there, teaching out the forces. So I came back to England in about 79. I was 10. And I just started playing junior football locally. So I was probably a bit unusual. I came in the long league way, went through and played at Scarborough. And probably if it wasn't for Neil Warnock joining Scarborough and taking me on to Notts County at 21, I probably would have missed the boat. I wasn't really, I wasn't even a centre-back then. So I was a right winger, can you believe it? I made my debut on the right wing. So not a lot of people can believe that. And then went into midfield. And Neil just saw something in me, threw me in at Birmingham City away for Scarborough Reserves in a middle intermediate league and played against Peter Withe. And I couldn't believe I was playing against someone who'd won the Champions League or the European Cup as it was then. I did okay and Neil stuck with me and then I sort of steadily went through the leagues with him for initially and then got my move to Derby, but then on, obviously onto Everton. So it was a different way in. Bearing in mind though, the England team then was a lot of ex-non-league players, Stuart Pearce, Ian Wright, Chris Waddle. So, yeah, I probably wasn't that unusual, but nowadays you don't really come through that route.
What was it like then playing under Neil Warnock? Because that's very interesting stuff. What's he like as a character? Because he comes across as a real funny guy, down to the west. See him as you take him, to be honest. Is that what he's like as well, as a person?
I think, Ben, a lot of people probably could say he's Marmite. But the lads who have played for him will always talk highly of him. People don't really know him. And the mark of the man, you know, I still keep in touch with him now. I play for him at three clubs. He went to be Leeds manager about 2010, bearing in mind in 1988, he came to my parents' house in Pickering, North Yorkshire to try and sign me for Notts County. It didn't happen at that moment. You roll on 22 years to 2010. He calls me out of the blue and says, "Are your parents still living at the same address?" I say, "Yeah, they are." My dad rang me that night and said, "You never guess who just appeared at our house." And Neil had gone round just for a chat and a cup of tea with my dad. He pulled up in his Aston Martin when my dad was cutting the grass. So that's the sort of mark of the man. I played with him in the 80s, played with him in the 90s, then went back in the 2005. And he gave me, I wouldn't be sitting talking to you now if it wasn't for him. And I'm sure that can be said of a lot of lads, you know, who played for him. He took a lot of players with him to different clubs. He was an incredible motivator. I know we talk about modern day coaches, but you still want to play for people. And I was lucky to have those sort of managers in, you know, even Everton. Howard didn't want to let Howard down, didn't want to let Walter down, didn't dare want to let Walter down, didn't want to let Joe Royal down. Neil was that sort of that ilk, and I loved playing for him. He gave me what, you know, I would not be sitting talking to you now, Ben, if it wasn't for him.
Obviously, we Derby County then come in, which back then was a massive transfer. It was £2.5 million they paid for your services. What was that like then, going to obviously Derby County, and then did you feel a bit more of a pressure given the fee?
If you ask the Derby fans, the first year I had a pretty disaster, really, man. I really struggled. I'd only just been 3 years out of non-league football. Everything happened really quickly. We'd had two promotions with Neil. Johnny, don't sit around the back. Just
He can stay with us, Everton.
Listen, Johnny, you put your... So I had the two promotions with Neil by the playoffs. Happened really, really quickly. You sort of elevated to you know, that sort of fee when I think Notts County had only paid 160 grand for me, and all of a sudden it goes up to 2.5 million. I think it was only because Blackburn and Jack Walker and Lionel Pickering at Derby were bidding, and it got to be a bit of an auction. So it didn't do me any favours. I'd just come out of the old First Division, which is the Premier League with Notts. We've been relegated. So I went in the Championship, struggled my first year, really struggled, found it hard. Had a bit of the imposter syndrome, thinking, oh, this is my last contract. Was never, ever going to play much further than past that. And then I managed to get my form back and got the captaincy there. And funnily enough, played Everton the year they won the FA Cup. We played them in the third round at Goodison. So that was my introduction to Big Dunk. I could have joined them, I think, early. I think what happened was we had a discussion in the March of that year that Derby turned down a bid for me from Joe. And then I end up playing against Everton in the March, and I think it was the third round or whatever round it was, and Everton beat us 1-0. So that was my first introduction to Dunk. I'd played there the year before, or 2 years before, in Notts County in the old First Division, and that was in the early start for Mo Johnson when Mo came to Everton. So that was my first chance to go and play at Goodison was with Notts County. But I struggled a bit at Derby, managed to get my form back, and I suppose I did okay against Big Dunk in that game.
So what was it like going to Goodison Park as an opposition player? Did it feel like hostile? Could you tell it was old? The wooden seat, as we always like to say here on the channel. It has got that a bit of Bastion feel to it, you know, the old-fashioned grounds. Could you sense that as a playing there, as an opposition player?
It's probably after I left the club as well, going to Blackburn, I went back more times. You know, I went there with Derby once in the Cup and then Notts County once. So later on, I realised how difficult a place it was to go. You know, I was up against Kevin Campbell and Wayne, of course, was coming through. Not always nice to get that all ex-players get such a lovely welcome there, you know. And I've been back a few times in Goodison with my family since I've retired, with my parents. That was a wonderful special occasion, that was. How well you get looked after. And with my son, of course, this last season. But as a player coming back, it's a very, very intimidating place to go to. I know the 4 years I was there, at times we were flirting with relegation and it was tough periods, but I didn't realise how difficult a place it was to go to until I joined Blackburn. And going back there with Blackburn, I found it very, very difficult. And I know they're getting a new stadium. It looks fantastic, the new stadium. When I was back there at Goodison earlier this season, I walked out of the Goodison, I was talking to a fan as I was walking out. I said, it'd be sad when I leave this place. And it will be, because there's so much history there. You know, the decades before I was there, some very, very successful periods in the club's history, and a real special place. And I'm not being disrespectful to Derby, but when I signed that day in '95, the step up for me was huge. I thought Notts County to Derby was big, but going from Derby to Everton was a massive step for me again, and something I took a while to get used to.
So how did that move come about then, Craig? Obviously, 95, Everton had just won the FA Cup. And then I think it was Joe Royal has given you the call. Was there any other clubs interested? Why Everton? Why at that time? How did that come about?
Sheffield Wednesday put a bigger bid in. I was fortunate I had a clause in my contract to get out at a certain price. And I met Joe on the A1 near Selby Fork Hotel. It was with my dad. And, you know, we're having that sort of approach from a Premier League club, especially one that just won the FA Cup, and a big club like Everton, was, I couldn't believe it was happening, really. I was 24, was I 24, 25? 25 I would be. And moving again, going back to the Prem after a disappointing first year at Derby, then luckily I got my form back. Having that sort of contact from a manager who just won the FA Cup, a legend at Everton, meeting him on the motorway with my dad, and then that's how it started. And it took a while. Pre-season was well underway before I moved. But I was fun. It's funny, actually. I signed the same day as Andre Kончеlskis.
Wow, you know, what a player.
You know, he was going for 5.5 million. He was a superstar. And I got introduced to sort of... Can I swear on this?
Of course you can.
It's the first time I had an agent. So I arrived at Goodison, signed. My head was in dream world. Got my contract. It wasn't because of the finances. It was just because I was signing for a big club. Obviously, it would make a difference to my life financially. I walked out of Goodison, got in my agent's car, and there was three young lads on the street. And I can't do a Scouse accent, but they asked me for my autograph. And so I signed the autograph, and an older lad went by. And his comments were, I want to get his autograph, lads. He's fucking crap.
Yeah. Welcome to Everton.
That was my introduction to Merseyside. But then Joe Royal gave me a book in the car. I went in his car to the training ground. He showed me around at Belfield. And he gave me a book, and it was Everton's history. He said, make sure you read that. And I'll ask you a couple of questions. He never did ask me the questions, but I did make sure I zipped through it. And my dad had told me about Brian LeBone, people like that. You know, I met Brian a few times before he sadly passed away. So I had a good idea about the history of the club anyway, especially in the 80s, because I was growing up as a kid watching them in the Merseyside derbies. And that's one thing I never, ever could get my head around. I was going to play in a Merseyside derby.
Obviously, you played for Everton. On Wikipedia, it says 99 times, scoring 4 goals, it says. Can you remember the 4 goals? Remember where they were?
I can remember definitely 2 of them. The first one, my dad had a bet on me. You know, nowadays, you can't have a bet, can you?
No.
Dad had a bet on me at 40-1. It was a boxing day against Middlesbrough. We won 4-0, I think. And Limpar hit a diagonal. I was still in the box for some reason and just got my head on the end of it, went in the bottom corner, which I was chuffed with. I scored then against Wimbledon. I scored a classic own goal at Southampton away at the Dell. Big Nev came for it when I headed it over him in. But I can't remember the other two, but those two I can remember, yeah.
What was the dressing room like then, obviously, back then? Everton, obviously, at that time, won the FA Cup, had a few back-to-back, you know, relegation fights, relegation survivors, but there were some big characters in that dressing room. You spoke about Duncan Ferguson, you know, Neville Stouffer. Joe Parkinson's been a big fan of the channel. He comes to all our events. What a bloke he is.
My roommate. My old roommate, Joe. Joe was my roommate.
So what was that like in the dressing room with these obviously big egos? And was it difficult?
It was, yeah, because big stars for me. You know, Neville was a superstar. Duncan was a big, obviously, getting his legendary status there. So I was coming up into the big league, a club that had just won the FA Cup, a very tight dressing room. Unzi coming through as a young lad with Dave Watson. You know, I had a lot of respect for Dave, and it grew and grew over those 4 years I played alongside him. You know, he was a machine. He sort of gave me that impetus to look after myself physically and your diet and nutrition. Yeah, Dave liked a night out, but he was an incredible athlete and professional. And that's what the difference was, I think, from the Championship to the Premiership, was the professionalism. Yeah, there were some lads in there who, like I said, when we went out for a drink, we enjoyed ourselves, but dedicated professionals. Barry Horn, another one. You know, the dogs of war in front of you, you had a little bit of protection with those lads in front of you. The game probably has gone a little bit away from the physical side, but I quite enjoyed that side of the game. You had to cope with it as a centre-back when you're playing against people like Fash and Dunk. But it was a close-knit dressing room. Yeah, Nev was a bit of a loner, but obviously an outstanding keeper and probably was the best in the world, wasn't he, at one time. Yeah. I was lucky to go on to play with Brad Friedel later on in my career, so I was lucky I had 2 good goalkeepers behind me during those periods. But it was tight. That dressing room, it was tight. Tony Grant was probably Gary Ablett and Tony Grant were the lads to welcome me into the dressing room. I remember my first day, and Gary Ablett was lovely. Made me feel very, very, very much at home. Big Dunk, I was living in a hotel. Big Dunk would take me out a couple of times in Liverpool, show me the nights out in Liverpool. Joe pulled me one day, and Joe said to me, because I think he obviously found out that I'd been out with Dunk. So he said, don't go out so many times with Duncan when I just come to a new club. But it was the level of professionalism, I think it was. And the training facility as well, of course. You know, all right, Belfield now to Finch Farms, nothing to compare. But back then, Belfield was the best place I'd ever walked into as a training facility. Willie Donaghy as a coach was probably ahead of his time regarding fitness. And I think people playing against the Dogs of War then would be really up against it physically. And fitness wise, because we had a very, very fit team with a blend of craft and guile in Andre, who had a tremendous season. Limpar, you know, coming on. Paul Ridout, my old teammate in Notts County. And of course, you had the fullbacks in Earl and Andy Inchcliffe, you know, alongside me when I was playing. So it was a big step for me.
There was definitely the foundations of what was a solid team, but obviously you mentioned Duncan. What was it like then at Belfield? You know, we've all seen the past of, you know, David Ginola and Paul Gascoigne in a wig. Were there any shenanigans that went on behind the scenes or for morale?
Yeah, it was just a constant fun to be there. You know, Dave Watson was just so funny. You know, he led the team really well. He was a great captain, but the Scouse humour, I got to know that really pretty quickly. Granty, Tony Grant, Dunk. We were, those days, there was no social media, so we could go and have a, you know, within reason, you could go and have a bit of fun, and not be spoilt by strict regulations. You know, we really, really trained hard under Willie Donachie. He put us through it. So, and they had a bit of a different system then, or different timetable. We used to train Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, coming Friday, and that was something different I'd never done before, and I felt great on a Saturday for that. But when we had a time to go out, we'd go out in Southport quite a bit. I lived in Southport. Limpar was up there. Paul Rideout was up there. The lads would come up. Dave Waggy would come up there. And just to go talking about Dave Watson here, I saw a T-shirt with a supporter. And you might have, well, you're younger than me, of course, but I'm sure Evertonians remember this. It was the old VW advert. And remember the V had the VW with V and W inside the circle, and it said under the advert for VW, if only everything in life was reliable as a VW. I saw a T-shirt with DW, if only everything in life was reliable, Watson. And that's what he was, you know. He was a 7 out of 10 every week, and that's why Joe picked him all the time. And sometimes I got left out because of Dave, because he was just at that consistency level, which I wanted to get to. But when Howard came in as well, it was always a fun place to be, even with Walter as well. Walter was stricter. Howard was a man that I really, really grew very, very fond of. Even though we had one or two fallouts, loved playing for him. And he was always a joker, always playing cards on the back of the bus. His favourite player was Graeme Stewart. You couldn't sit next to Graeme Stewart. Howard needed to have that seat next to Graeme. He loved Chase the Ace, which is the most simple card game you ever play, with his cigar and his glass of wine. And it was enjoyable being with him.
What was it like then, obviously, under different managers? You mentioned the Everton managers that you obviously played under. Was it like an instant impact, you know, Walter compared to Joe, compared to Howard? Was it as soon as they came in day one? I've heard a few stories about Walter Smith being very strict, as you quite rightly said. A few journalists you've had on the podcast have said, if you got on the wrong side of him, if you pissed him off, you knew about it 2 hours before.
Well, I was lucky later on in my career, I played for Graeme Souness, and Graeme and Walter worked together at Rangers, of course. So, you know, working for top managers who I had so much respect for. I remember Walter coming in at halftime at Leicester. I think I might be responsible for definitely one goal against us. Tony Cotty scored. We were 2-0 down. And he came in and he went, right, who wants to fucking fight me? And I thought, wow. And we all sat there. No one said a word. And he never spoke too much. But when he spoke, you really listened to him. Archie did all the training. For Howard, it was different. Like I said at the start of this, I didn't want to let anyone down, you know, and when the managers had that sort of pedigree and that sort of success behind them, if you got a hug off them, Ben, coming off the pitch, and it's like the same with Graeme when I played for Graeme at Blackburn, it made you feel 10 feet tall. It was that reward of just getting a well done from someone like that who'd achieved so much in the game. Howard achieved so much in the game. Walter had. Joe Royal just won the FA Cup, Everton legend. So, like we're talking about coaches or managers, there has to be a blend there. And now, those days, it was more man managers, motivators, people who you wanted to run through brick walls for. So Walter, yeah, he's more strict, but I loved it. I loved his, he had a real dry wit, sense of humour. Howard had a brilliant sense of humour. You know, I remember, you might remember this, but I remember falling out with him at Coventry away. We played Coventry away on a Wednesday night with the cup. My daughter had been born on the Monday. We played Coventry on the Wednesday night, got hammered 4-1. And it's one of those games where I thought I'd given him everything. But, well, certain lads had let him down, or the team had let him down. And Howard came on the pitch as the final whistle went. There was about 3,000 or 4,000 Evertonians there. I was angry because we'd lost. I probably reacted. Howard said, right, you lot are going to humiliate me, I'll humiliate you. And he wanted us to do every line and back, which is a pre-season run, running the length of the pitch, 6 yard back, 18 halfway. And I refused to do it. At the time, it was just because I was angry and upset, and I felt humiliated as well. But I thought I'd given him everything. I thought I wasn't doing that. And me and Gary Speed fell out, and Slaven Bilic was there, and said, you got to do it. No, and we walked off the pitch. And the next day, the headlines was mutiny at Highfield Road. I was ashamed. My dad said, "Well, what's happened?" You know, this was on the Wednesday, but on the Saturday, we had Liverpool at home. I thought, you know, and it was like we were struggling, and I knew I'd be probably getting a little bit of stick from the fans if I went against the manager's wishes, or if they saw that fallout between player and manager. Howard called me in on the Thursday morning. I went into the Belfield on the Thursday. We were having a cool down. Jimmy Martin, the kit man, said, the manager wants to see you. This was after, obviously, the night before where it had all gone wrong. He called me in. He said, "Son," he says, "but I'm sorry about last night. I shouldn't have had a go at you because you gave me everything." I said, "Look, Matt, boss," I said, I'm sorry I reacted like that. You know, there was a whole awful photograph of me in the Dead Express pointing at him." And he said, "Look," he said, "I'm going to tell the press I fined you 2 weeks' wages because it." And I went mad again. Then he said, "Look, Dave, calm down." He said, I'm not fining you 2 weeks' wages." And just as I was about to leave his office, he stopped me, sat me back down, got a bottle of champagne out of his drawer, two glasses, and we toasted the birth of my daughter from the Monday. And this is the Wednesday night I've fallen out with him. I was probably I was in the wrong. Thursday morning, I was in his office drinking champagne with him. And Saturday, we were going to win 2-0. I think Dave Watson got man of the match. And that was just a huge emotional rollercoaster for me that week. Daughter born Monday, Wednesday at hammered. Saturday, we win a Merseyside derby. And that was probably one of my highlights of my Everton career, really, and doing it for him and knowing what he'd done for the club over those years.
You mentioned Gary Speed, and obviously, sadly, lost his life. We had Jimmy Martin on the channel, and he said what a phenomenal person, character he was. What was it like sharing the dressing room with Gary Speed?
I roomed with Gary for a period. He went to Sheffield United later on in his career, and I still had links with Sheffield. I retired at Sheffield United. I knew where I can remember exactly where I was the day I heard what happened. We had a really good relationship. I'd only spoken to him a couple of weeks before he died, and we kept in touch after our Everton days, and when he went to Newcastle, of course. But he was someone in the dressing room who, as soon as he walked in, he had that presence, good sense of humour. I always remember his giggle. Outstanding trainer. There was a lot of outstanding trainers then, Ben. You know, I remember John Collins coming. He just come back from Monaco. Terry Phelan, Waggy, of course. Some really, really good professionals. And Gary was up there with all of them, you know. I think he found it difficult at first to settle in. But then he got player of the year, went to a more central position. He played that day when we beat Liverpool 2-0, the day when Howard was in charge, when I'd fallen out with Howard. But I just always calm, Gary. Never saw him got flustered, even when he was getting a little bit of criticism. I think that happened when he went to Newcastle because they thought he was replacing Ginola. He was never going to replace Ginola, but he was his own player. And then speaking to some of the Welsh lads who had him as a manager when he went to do the Welsh job, professionalism, dedication to his task, his role, maturity, and you know, made absolutely the most of his career. And it's funny because we played against each other at Leeds when he was at Leeds and I was other clubs, and I didn't really on the pitch used to fall out with him quite a bit on the pitch, but got on so well with him when we became teammates. And it was it's so tragic what happened. It really was.
Yeah, it really was. And just moving on, some obviously quick fire questions as well before we move on to your managerial side of things. Obviously, you've mentioned about trainers and players being better in training and stuff like that. So I'm going to ask you, who are your best players you've played with at Everton? But it's two separate occasions. Who's the best match day player and who was the best player in general, including training?
Andre was, he had that first season where he was a right winger and I used to see fullbacks show him in on his left foot. I used to cut in on his left foot and smash it in with his left foot. And I think he got 16 goals my first season, 95-96. But that wasn't a fluke because you'd go in there's a big indoor gym at Belfield. And I see him going there after training with 20 balls and just smash them at the wall with his left foot. It was just not much accuracy, it was just getting power on his weaker foot. So when fullback showed him inside, that's what he did. So Andre was a match winner, do it on a Saturday. Of course, Duncan, I remember Duncan away at Manchester United. He scored two goals. We got a 2-2 draw. We went two up. He was unplayable that day. And some of the in the big games at times, Merseyside derbies, Manchester United, Arsenal, he would turn up and he'd be a centre-back's nightmare. But I can remember that performance from him that night. He scored a header and a volley, I think, at Old Trafford. Trainers, in training every day, I admired Gary for what he did every day, Gary Speed. I admired Dave Watson, what he did every day, because he was coming to the end, but he had these high standards. Pre-season, I always thought my fitness was one of my strengths in my game, really. That's what I really worked on. And I think I'll be 30, 31 away in Italy somewhere. And we were doing this awful run. It's a hard shuttle. And on my shoulder would be Dave Watson, who was like eight years older than me. You know, that's what kept me going in my career, that sort of example. So, yeah, Dave Watson, Kanchelskis, Dunk, the players, I would say, yeah.
Your favourite Everton moment as a whole?
That derby, that week at that derby, you know, we'd run 2-0. I was under a bit of pressure because I'd upset the club legend and the manager. That would be it. I think I had a decent run from box to box. I just wish it ended up in a goal. I slipped Danny Camaratri in and he missed it. But that day for me was an emotional roller coaster. And I remember Dave, when we were warming up, Dave running past me and saying he was drained. I think, God, if you're drained, what are we going to do? But we did. We won 2-0. And the derbies for me were special, special moments. The first one away as well, we won 2-1. Paul scored one. I think Kanchelskis scored one. Paul Rideout. Robbie scored at the end. That was another special. The derbies, I couldn't, you know, I never thought I'd ever perform and play in a derby, let alone play, I think, 6 or 7, I think it was. So, yeah, those are the special moments.
And we've got to touch on it, your worst Everton moment or the one that you least you regret.
I was sending off Rotterdam, 90-odd minute. You know, I know it didn't mean anything because the game was done, but I lashed out at Ronald Koeman. That was a bad day.
We don't blame you for that.
Yeah, it'd gone through me a couple of times. I thought I can't, but that yeah, way Rotterdam, I was down about after that. Own goal at Southampton wasn't a great moment. And Neville came for it. I had a couple of those moments. Yeah, you just football is like that. You go Saturday for Tuesday, you can be brilliant on a Saturday and crap on a Tuesday. So you're just trying to keep that. Like I said, set that consistency. What Dave Watson was like, 7 out of 10 every week, if you could.
And obviously, moving on, you've been at many clubs, Craig, obviously, through your career. A lot of Everton fans are quite biased to say when Everton touches you, you understand what it means. And obviously, the club consumes you all. We've just seen your little lad there in his Everton top, seems Everton mad. Is it slightly different to other clubs? Are we being biased? Or is there something within the DNA of this football club that is special?
It's certainly the biggest club I play for. You know, I was lucky to go to Blackburn and I know Everton fans won't like it, but I played for a legend in Graeme Souness. And we had success there. We finished fifth in the Prem and we won the Worthington Cup. We finished fifth in the Prem with Everton, of course, my first year or second year, the last game of the season. So you don't realise it, Ben, until you go back afterwards. And I think, even though you know you're playing for a big club, since I've been back about 6 or 7 times now, they kindly invite ex-players back and it's such a lovely day out. You know, I've been there with my wife and my son. I'll hopefully go back again soon before we move to the new stadium or you move to the new stadium. You realise when you leave the place how special it is when you go back. There's just that buzz about it. The old ground, like you said at the beginning, Upton Park had that, I suppose. I'm sure ex-West Ham players won't feel the same about the new stadium. The warmth of the people. Yeah, I tell you what, when you were struggling, you knew you were struggling and they let you know you were struggling. But if you did well for them, and I think I've become a better player for Everton since I left the place than I was there. You know, when you go back, you get greeted and say, put your boots on, lad, and all this. And I'm thinking, yeah, so when I was here, I'm sure you were thinking at times not to put my boots on. But I think Goodison makes that, of course. Goodison does make it. I know the struggles, the fights you've had, the points deduction that you're going through at the moment. The resolve to, and the resilience to get through that, you know, a club that I stayed up with that club by one goal one season, you know, when we drew with Coventry. You know, I never wanted to be in a team that would get Everton relegated. It came very close to that. So I know how important Premiership status is to the club, not just financially, but for the community and the people itself. And I am ever so fond of going back there. And that's probably out of all the clubs I've played for, it's the most I've been back to any club to watch football.
What are your thoughts then? Obviously, you've touched on that taboo subject now in regard to the points, the off-the-field issues. Football has gone absolutely berserk now financially. It's an absolute multi-billion-pound business. What are your thoughts then surrounding obviously what's going on with Everton, the Premier League, the direction it's going? Because us as fans, and as you quite rightly said, it's very frustrating. And the only losers here are the fans.
Well, that's actually exactly it. The only losers are the fans. Players will come and go. You know, players aren't fans. You know, however fond I became of Everton and Sheffield United I play for and all the other clubs I play for. I still follow every club I play for. Of course I do. And I was fond of every club I play for. Special relationship with Evertonians and, of course, the Blackburn. I was there 6 years. I don't understand the legal ramifications, but what I can't understand, and I was listening to the radio yesterday, is about this might not be sorted out until after the end of the season when the last ball's kicked. Now, how can that be right? You know, I don't enjoy looking back at that Coventry game that day. But us scraping through that game and getting I think we got a 1-1. I know Nick Barman missed a penalty. final whistle went, I knew exactly where we were going to be playing the next year. The fans were celebrating with the players. It was like we won the Champions League. We should never really be in that position, of course. But it was a dire build-up to that week, that day, because we'd lost Arsenal the week before. At least we knew we had our future in our own hands, and we managed to secure safety. Now, listening to the radio yesterday, if Forest appeal, these appeals won't be, or the verdicts of the appeals won't be heard until the end of after the gate last balls kick. So I just don't know how there has to be another way of doing it. I'm not sure what Everton, you know, I'm not knowledgeable enough to know what Everton has spent on players and what their financial situation is, but the fans are the losers, Ben, and I think really you have to have some clarity well before the end of the season with these legal appeals. And I hear Manchester City is still waiting on their charges as well, of course. So I'm not a lawyer, but it's a sad turn of events when you've just got through one docking of 1 point. It seemed to galvanise the club anyway, which I knew it would. Evertonians pulling together, that siege mentality of you to go on and perform, and Sean's trying to do that and doing a good job. But then you've been dragged back into it again, of course, with that recent points deduction, but not knowing your fate until the end of the season, after the end of the season, which is madness, absolute madness.
It certainly is. And what are your views on, obviously, Sean Dyche and the job he's doing and the players that we've got? Because there seems to be a bit of a split at the moment. Obviously, some Evertonians are frustrated with the style of play, and everyone has the right to their opinion. It's just, I feel like he's got probably the hardest job in the Premier League currently, managing this case of a football club currently. What are your views on, obviously, the team, the players, the manager this season, and how it's gone?
Yeah, I'm watching it from afar here, Ben. A lot of the foreign managers have come and gone, you know, not shown a great deal of loyalty. And I've heard from sources, the inner rumblings when those managers were in place. Was there a connection with the community? I think Sean, from what I see, was trying to do that. I know he's already managed Burnley before that, but did a wonderful, wonderful job at Burnley. Evertonians for years and now will want to go back to those glory days, of course, of the 80s, you know, which I witnessed as a kid. That unfortunately, nowadays, the money talks, doesn't it? The huge amounts of money in the game. The Man City have established a monopoly on trophies. You're at Liverpool now. Arsenal coming good. There's a huge, huge long way to go for Everton and the club. I know they're going to a new stadium. They've got to secure that safety now of the Premiership and secure that and then build from there. But I think Sean will see you through that for the future. Yeah, I can understand why Everton fans want probably a bigger name. I hope Sean doesn't mind me saying that. he's that realistic himself, you know. I'm sure he knows that he's under pressure all the time, but I'm sure he's the man to keep you in that safe position, get you in that safe position, and then you can get on to enjoy the new stadium going forward. But it's tough. It's a tough, tough league, and such a relief to stay up that time we drew with Cov.
And it's nice to see you've got your little lad into the life of misery with us as well, to be honest. It's always nice to see young toppies coming through.
Yeah, he's often asked about the results, and he's witnessed all the clubs I've been at. He's been to all of them now. But he was just amazed that day because it was 40,000 nearly, you know, against Arsenal. He's not, none of the other clubs I've been playing for had that sort of number. So he sat there, he was in awe. He was in awe. I think what he was in awe of was the build-up before the game, you know, around the streets of Goodison, and, you know, all the fans milling around the streets, around the club shop, of course, in that fan zone area. That was what was probably blew him away a little bit. And then, yeah, I don't get recognised. I'm living in the south of England now and getting recognised more up there. That's what he probably couldn't get used to a little bit. But yeah, he's a mad footy fan. He's born in Bolton, so he loves the claim of being a northerner. He doesn't want to be a southerner like me.
Yeah, good lad. But keeping as a northerner. But back onto yourself, Craig. Obviously, you had a bit of a stint in management and most recently at Oxford. How was that? How was the difference in becoming a manager? You know, people don't realise how much work goes on behind the scenes being a manager, you know, the coaching staff. It's different altogether, isn't it?
Well, just we touched on Sean then, and I've only done this at a lower league level. I did it abroad briefly. I did it in Notts County. I found it very, very difficult. I don't know how they do it at the top level. They have to have a lot of staff, of course. They have the demands, the media, commercial, let alone the players' demands nowadays. I think the players are probably a bit more demanding nowadays, I'm sure. I think probably back then, as players, we solved problems ourselves a little bit more. I think academies, not to blame, because academies do some wonderful work, because you give players so much in academies, they're used to that. And now the senior pros, they rely on it a bit too much. So for managers, that's an extra stress, an extra consideration. But I find it very, very stressful. And the criticism now for Scull, when I played, I never had social media. So players getting criticised on social media, it's bad enough getting criticised in the newspapers and having their fans have a go at you in the street. But when it's on social media as well, that must be very, very difficult. We talk about mental health and welfare of human beings. I think that sometimes has got to be addressed. And managers they're not immune to that sort of abuse either, you know. So that's something. There's an old poem called The Man in the Arena. It talks about people who've been in that arena and tried it and experienced the stresses and pressure. Until you've been and walked in those shoes, especially at the top level, which I never have, apart from playing there, it's a difficult place to be. I found that very difficult when I was at League One level and assistant manager at Championship level. So I'm quite happy coaching. And it flies by the time, Ben. It does. You talk CX pros. I've been retired now. Oh, 17 years now, 18 years. Where's that gone? It's just incredible.
And obviously a young Evertonian, well, a young Everton player was at Oxford recently in young Stanley Mills, obviously suffered a horrendous injury, obviously against Coventry in the cup in the last kick of the game, basically. What do you make of him then? You know, he's a young boy, came to Oxford, started off really well, scored a few goals and such unfortunate news, and we all heard that he'd obviously done his ligaments in his knee. You know, you've seen him up close, got a big potential.
Yeah, I was really impressed. He had a great attitude, like his dad did. And it's funny, just touching on Andrei Konchelskis, because he was a right winger, an out and out right winger, Stan. Fullbacks wanted to show him inside. And I said to him, come on, you've got to work on your left foot. And I think I probably even told him the story about Andrei working on his left foot. And he was there working every day on his weaknesses. Afterwards, he'd have to do the extras. He'd done the hour and a half session, then he'd do the extras, and he worked on his left foot. And I remember him probably back in September, October, he got a great goal away at Fleetwood with his left foot, cut inside and smashed it in. Wonderful athlete, you know, got good genes, of course. But when he did the injury, it was so innocuous. You would never thought it would be as bad as that. And he was at our game about a week ago with his dad. He came down to see the lads, and he's got another 6 months, I think, to rehab, I think. So, but knowing how hard he works off the field, he'll soon be back. And he was talented. Anyone with pace at the top end of a pitch is a threat. And he certainly had that.
Yeah, I'm still wishing well in his recovery. And what's your plan now, Craig, going forward? You know, keeping note, towing management, coaching, you know, what's the plans now?
No, I'm assistant manager with Oxford. I'm quite happy doing that role. I've been down living in this area for 6-7 years now. Fortunate, I don't have to travel. You know, I was travelling quite a long time to Derby, doing a 23s job. I work with my brother, who's a sports scientist there. My wife's from this area. She's been involved in football. She was a football agent years ago. So I'm pretty set. I live near Silverstone. It's an F1, obviously F1 area around here. So yeah, I'm not that ambitious now. I've had, you know, I was ambitious as a player, but I'm lucky. There's a lot of good people out of the game, Ben. I'm lucky to have a good job at a good club, a good League One club. And hopefully our plan now is to get in the playoffs and try and get promotion to the Championship. We've been that close for 4 years. That's the plan at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. And do you think, is that the aim this season, to obviously try and get promoted to the Championship?
Yeah, it's a tough one. There's some good teams. But we got to the playoff semi-final a couple of years ago. Blackpool knocked us out. And I've gone through the playoffs as a player before, never as a coach or a manager. So that's the aim. It will extend our season a little bit, break into our summer. But I'd love to get the team up, and after all the backing we've had, and we've got a good side, and it's good. I'm working with younger players as well. I enjoy that. You know, people like Millsy when he came. I've come from a youth development background with my academy days at Derby, so I'm enjoying that. I'm enjoying the process.
Craig, well, from me here with a view from the Bullens, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on today. You know, hearing them stories about Gary, Duncan, Howard, Joe, everyone. It really is a pleasure, and I really do appreciate you coming on and obviously talking to all of us. It's been amazing. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Ben. Really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
No worries, Craig. Have a great week. And there we have it, ladies and gents. Another episode here at the View from the Bullens. We hope you did enjoy it. Leave your comment and your feedback on Craig. You know, if that was you in the street saying he's fucking crap, then make sure you leave the comments.
He was fucking shat, I think it was.
Yeah. Make sure you leave the comments and I would absolutely do all that. But in the meantime, have a great week and up the toppies.
Thanks, Ben.
Mm-hmm.